from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those big swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauley on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
On a Wednesday evening, we welcome you in. It's time for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. Have you till 8 o'clock this evening. As always, if you want to join in on the program, you can get connected by calling, texting, tweeting, or leaving a voice message to call or text. Same phone number, 314-436-7900. If you want to tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air, or you can leave a voice message on the Odyssey app. We take you till 8 o'clock this evening on air here on KMOX, also video streaming as well, as we normally do, via YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you want to check it out. If you ever want to see what's going on here in the KMOX studio, you can watch Graybar Sports Open Line, and say you're watching on Facebook, you can comment on that, and the comments come in, and I can see what you happen to be saying. So lots of ways for you to get connected with us. We've got a lot coming up on the show today. Two guests this hour, one guest coming up next hour. Bernie Miklas is going to join us for our weekly conversation in about 10 minutes. We'll get his take on what's going on in the baseball playoffs. Also get his take on the Blues, who struggled last night. Speaking of the Blues, Matthew DeFranks, beat writer covering the Blues for the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. He'll join us at 6:35. And then next hour, we'll be joined by Chris Whittingham. He is going to be on the call for City SC's final game of the season coming up this weekend for Apple TV. And we'll talk all things City SC with him coming up at 7:20. Couple other things to get to between now and the end of the show, including hearing from Blues head coach Drew Bannister. We'll play back some of what he had to say in his media conference earlier today. We'll do that at about 7:35. I was disappointed in the effort that the Blues put on the ice last night in their home opener. Not an end of the world type situation, and I'm not. Look, I'm. If you've been listening to me at all, you know that. Maybe this is even a flaw of mine. You might view it as a flaw. I view it as a strength. I am not someone who moves in the wind. It takes a lot to push my opinion in one direction or another. I'm always open for my opinion to change, but I'm not just somebody who's got a different opinion, a different hot take from one day to the next. That's never who I've been. It never will be who I'm going to be. I am confident in my beliefs, and it takes very clear, concrete evidence for me to start changing. And that happens. There's things that I definitely have changed my mind on and changed my viewpoint on. And look, sometimes we get text or we get calls or we get great calls and somebody says something and it's just a great point that I really have to think through. And that's one of my favorite parts of this job. I love it when, especially like during Cardinal season on the postgame show, when we get people who call in with opinions that are different than mine, but are very well thought out, and we can have a conversation. Like, that's fun for me. I love that. I love being able to talk through things with people. So I'm willing to change, but it takes a little bit. I feel like last night's loss for the Blues, I say all that to say this. I feel like last night's loss for the Blues kind of changes the way we look at the first two games. Kind of. Hey, Glenn, we are four games into the season, and I'm not trying to be dismissive of the accomplishments of the season opening three-game road trip. They won two out of three. They came back in two games. They showed great character, great resilience. All those things that we have been talking about day after day after day about the Blues, all those things remain true. So I'm not trying to create a new version of history based off what happened last night with the Blues. But I will say this. Would you see the way the Blues played last night, the subpar effort that was put out on the ice from an offensive and defensive standpoint, and then you take the step back and look at the season as a whole, and because there's only been four games played, so it is a tiny sample size, all of a sudden everything looks a little different. Before yesterday's game, through the first three games of the year, you take that same step back and you say, hey, this is a team that got down a couple times, but they were able to fight their way back, and they showed up defensively in that final third period in the, against Seattle, and they had the equalizer late in the San Jose game. Like, they're showing they had a shot against Vegas on a back-to-back on the West Coast. More good things than not. And then last night happens, and you take that same step back, and you look across the four games, and what do you see? You see a team that has trailed in every game that they've played this season. You see a team that has given up 12 goals in their last three games. Four goals given up each of their last three games. And it just looks a little bit different. Not majorly, it's not a huge difference. This is not a situation where yesterday I thought this was a playoff team and today I think that they're going to fire the coach in a month. Like, it's not that extreme kind of shift, but it looks one game, one performance like last night does change the complexion of what is the first four games of a very long season. You go from feeling good about winning two out of three to, well, they've given up a lot of goals and they've lost two in a row and they're kind of non-competitive in their own building on opening night when there was a lot of energy and excitement and enthusiasm. Doesn't look quite as good. There's going to be some changes with the lineup tomorrow, and we'll hear more about that when Drew Bannister, we'll hear from him coming up next hour, and then obviously later on this hour when we are set to be joined by Matthew DeFranks. Again, he's going to join us at about 6:35. Have a lot of things for him. But up next, we'll hear from Bernie Miklas. Time for his weekly conversation with us. That's going to be coming up in just a moment or so as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is presented by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
It is a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. One of my favorite parts of the week is when we get to tap into all things sports and just the knowledge that goes along with Bernie Miklas, who is a legendary sports columnist here in St. Louis, obviously. And now you see him on his YouTube channel. You see him writing at Scoops, and he's part of the KMOX team. And it's always great to be able to talk to him. Bernie, appreciate your time as always. How are you?
Matt, it's been a lot of fun to work with you and to get to know you. And I'm going to keep saying it over and over again. I am so delighted to be part of the KMOX sports family again.
Before we, and we're so obviously happy to have you with us, before we get anything to local, I wanted to get your take on something. Wait, you were at the Dallas Morning News at one point, correct? Do I have that right?
Yes. Okay. Sure.
Was Jerry Jones the owner of the Cowboys at that point?
Oh, my. Yeah, I got some Jerry Jones stories if you had about an hour, hour and a half. I was the beat writer covering the Cowboys. I covered Coach Landry's final season. It was a bad year, 3-13. Michael Irvin was a rookie that year. They got the first overall pick in the draft, so they were lined up to take Troy Aikman. And in February, after that 88 season, Jerry Jones bought the team. He flew down to Austin, Texas, found Tom Landry at Coach Landry's country club and fired him on like the 11th hole or something. So, and then the adventure began. So, yeah, I'm well acquainted with Jerry Jones.
This, for people who have not been paying attention, he went after some local host in Dallas who he talks to on a weekly basis. That's actually our sister station in Dallas. They're an Odyssey station. He basically threatened to fire them, even though he doesn't own the station or he's not their boss. And he is always really good with speaking with the media. Those hosts particularly ask him tough questions. But for whatever reason, this week he went after him. I was just curious, considering your connection to that market and knowing him a little bit, what's your takeaway on what you've seen over the last 24 hours, 36 hours from Jerry Jones?
Well, you know, when I was covering the Cowboys and after he took over, and I must say, like, I came back to St. Louis a year later to become the columnist, returned to St. Louis. I wanted to come back to be a columnist, very much wanted to come back to the city. I had a good relationship with Jerry Jones after that for quite a long time. He was a really good source of information. He was pleasant to deal with. He was always good for some laughs. He had an interesting perspective. I kind of turned on him later on because of his role in heisting the Rams out of St. Louis. And I think he's sort of become a joke. You know, I refer to the Cowboys as the NFL's version of the Kardashians. They're celebrities for no other reason except they're celebrities. Like, when's the last time the Cowboys won anything meaningful in the postseason? They're still living off the team that Jimmy Johnson built and won 3 Super Bowls. He wasn't the coach for the final Super Bowl, but he built that team. They're still living off that. They have been one of the most underachieving sports franchises, given the talent, given the wealth that they have, and their ability to do anything. They're one of the most underachieving sports franchises in North America.
Nobody feels overly bad for NFL head coaches. There's only a handful of those jobs existing, but Mike McCarthy's a good football coach. We saw that in Green Bay, and I feel bad for what he's going through right now, and he's probably going to be out of a job at the end of the year.
Yeah, Jerry Jones likes to torment coaches because in some ways the way he keeps them around is almost cruel, mm-hmm. right? Because once the fans turn on a coach and all and the 7,000 all sports stations in Dallas-Fort Worth and Austin and other parts, they turn on the coach. I mean, the coach is basically living a pretty unpleasant life outside the bubble of the team in the locker room. And it's just a matter of time. But Jerry Jones, the questions that the two hosts asked were legitimate questions. They weren't hostile. They weren't overly aggressive. People want to know, why didn't the Cowboys attempt to improve the team last offseason? Because they obviously did not improve the team. And they were very vulnerable to injuries. Their running back situation is remarkable for how incompetent it is. I mean, you got to go, if nothing else, go out and get a running back. And Ezekiel Elliott, you know, good for him, but he's done. He's toast. So Jerry Jones deserves a lot of credit. And this whole thing turned when he decided he knew more about football than Jimmy Johnson. And they've never been back at that level again. They've been good, but never back at that level.
We're talking with Bernie Miklas, our own Bernie Miklas. St. Louis Blues hockey last night. It's kind of funny because when it's such a small sample size, one game can really shift your view of things. And going into yesterday's game, you're looking at the first 3 games where they won 2 of them on the road, and then you add in the result from last night, which was a poor performance, and all of a sudden it's they've given up 4 goals in each of the last 3 games. They've been behind in each of their first 4 games. It just feels a little bit different, and I don't get swayed too much by one game here and one game there, but I think we are seeing some red flags here recently about this Blues team and clearly some things that they need to shore up.
Well, I want to say this because, the only reason I feel like I've earned the right to say this is because when I was talking about the Blues, I wrote about the Blues, did a video about the Blues. I said, I like a lot about the team, but there's some things that really concern me. And the first one, maybe Braden Schenn was the first thing I pointed out, whether he still had it. It could be a really good player. The second thing I believe, or maybe even the first I mentioned, is that I'm not crazy about the Nick Leddy, Colton Parayko pairing. And it isn't so much about Parayko. Nick Leddy was not good at all last season. And I think it's totally fair, even though it's only been 4 games, to point out that, if anything, he has gotten worse. And I know that he's probably playing hurt. He's going to miss tomorrow night's game with an injury. But I was doing some research earlier today because I was curious about this. Since the start of last season, the Parayko-Leddy defensive pairing has been on the ice for more goals than any defensive pairing in the National Hockey League. And like I said, and it's not like you can look at it as a glimmer of hope. You say, well, Leddy has been good for a long time. He'll get back in form. I don't see any evidence of that, quite frankly. I'm just being truthful and maybe a little blunt. I think they're going to have to think about a different way to structure that defense.
The Leddy stuff also, it's not just the plus minus, it's not just the goals that have been allowed, the optics on it have been terrible. It's very easy to see some very simple things that he has not done that has very directly led to goals.
And I wish I had access to metrics that would give, not just an estimate or something like that. I'd like to know about how much speed he has lost, for example, skating speed, since mm-hmm. he became a Blues. And physically he's not the same guy. He doesn't seem as smooth or as fast to me. And I think maybe he feels the pressure, you know, when you're an athlete and you're starting to lose it and it's age related. I think you put a lot of pressure on yourself. Maybe you try to overdo things and you only manage to sort of make things worse. I'm psychoanalyzing without a license, but you know, I just wonder what's going on with him. I kind of feel bad for the guy. I mean, Doug Armstrong's the one who re-signed him. You know, it's not like Nick Leddy gave himself a contract.
And now 39-year-old Ryan Suter is going to hop up on that top line with Parayko.
I think I'm okay with that, at least for a while. At least for a while. We'll see what Suter can do.
Last thing for you before we get you out of here, just a little baseball talk before we're done. Yankees have a 2-0 series lead. It really feels like they've been in control both those games. This Dodgers-Mets series has been more entertaining, more competitive, 1-1 going into New York. What has struck you over the last couple days about what you've seen in the baseball playoffs?
I really like to watch the Guardians, but their offense is really in a rut. And I'd like to say it's because the Yankees have super starting pitching. They really don't. And Gerrit Cole last night was very vulnerable, and the Guardians couldn't do anything. And the thing about the Yankees that is a huge, huge difference for them was that during the season, they had a bullpen that was in disarray, and they couldn't find a closer. And the fact that, you know, if you look at ERA, you look at win probability added, they had like the 20th or 22nd best bullpen in the majors. Luke Weaver, of all people, has changed that. He has given that bullpen a whole new dimension. He's been virtually perfect since they made him the closer in late, or I should say about the middle of September. And we saw that again last night. He did give up a meaningless home run, but Luke Weaver has been amazing, the former Cardinal. But we could say that about a lot of teams because he bounced around a long time. I think the Mets are going to win because I think they have a lot of momentum, and I think the Dodgers are really beat up.
You made a fantastic point when we did a sports roundtable earlier this week because we were talking about Lane Thomas, and you were talking about, you know, it's revisionist history on Lane Thomas walking out the door and all of a sudden becoming an impact player that the Cardinals weren't able to turn into. That narrative hasn't existed quite as much with Weaver, but I've seen a little bit of it popping up out there on social media. And to your point, since being with the Cardinals, Arizona, Kansas City, Cincinnati, Seattle, and then the Yankees, he's had a number of teams not get out of him what he's giving right now to the Yankees.
Yeah, Seattle released him, and then at another point, they brought him back and then basically designated him for assignment again. So one team gave up on him twice. Listen, I think there's a lot about the Cardinals we can criticize. There really is. But I think anybody who is reaching that far to somehow cast blame on them for what, for Luke Weaver? What?
Yeah.
They had him in a package for Paul Goldschmidt, who became the league MVP here, and they didn't suffer any consequences for trading Luke Weaver. And listen, man, there's no need to reach for stuff that makes you look like an idiot for like somehow blaming the Cardinals for trading Luke Weaver. There's a lot there that'll make you look smart. Don't make yourself look dumb. That would be my message.
Bernie Miklas joins us every week here on Sports Open Line. Bernie, who brings us your appearances here on Sports Open Line?
Well, after hollering like that, I need to cool down. So Saliga Heating and Cooling can come do that as well. It's Saliga Heating and Cooling. Here in the Miklas family, we've been relying on them for 15, 16 years. They've handled everything that has to do with our heating and cooling and problems and mini emergencies and everything else. Advice on how to make my home office, for example, a lot cooler in the summer. They had a great solution for it that wasn't that expensive. And this is independent American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning dealers been doing this for many generations of families. We're late to it, the Miklases, since 1927. And I'm proud to speak on them because I give them the highest mark in every area. I mean, the integrity's impeccable. The professionalism, the knowledge, the class they show when they're in your home, if they have to come in and work on something, they're not going to try to hustle you. They're as honest as any business I've ever seen, and they have a lot of ways to help you. And that American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning equipment, if you need some of that, if you need something new, boy, Saliga's got that for you as well. That's just a bonus. Any questions, problems, concerns, you call them at 314-481-7333, 481-7333, or go to SaligaHeatingandCooling.com.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are back at it right here on KMOX. It has been kind of an uneven start for the St. Louis Blues. Fantastic in the way they won the first two games in comeback fashion. They didn't play poorly against Vegas, but lost. But then they did not put a very, very good effort on the ice last night in losing to the Wild 4-1. And all of a sudden, they've allowed 12 goals in their last three games. Some lineup changes. They've been occurring. They will continue to occur. Some injuries occurring as well. To talk through all of that, we are very happy to welcome back onto the program. You read them in the Post-Dispatch and at STL Today. You follow him on Twitter at @mdefranks. He is Matthew DeFranks. He is the Blues beat writer for the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. Matthew, thank you for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Good. How are you, Matt?
Doing all right. Practice earlier today, Nick Leddy was not on the ice due to injury. However, at the same time, his play has not been very good. He's been on the ice for a lot of goals. The optics of some of these plays that he have not made that's led to goals has been not great. Seems like Drew Bannister wants to give him every opportunity in the world to kind of find it. But how much longer, once he is healthy, can the Blues go in allowing him to be on that top line pairing?
Yeah, it's to be seen, because in the years that he's been here, he's been on that top pair with Parayko, right? Last year, they were together on the ice for more time on ice than any other pair in the NHL. And it's just something that's been a familiar fallback for the Blues. If they do look at changing things up, and we'll know more about Letty's injury status tomorrow. Lower body injury, Drew Bannister said day-to-day, questionable for tomorrow against the Islanders. So whether that means he's out tomorrow or not, I don't know yet. In the short term, they put Ryan Suter there at practice today. In the long term, that could be a spot for a guy like Philip Broberg, who I've thought of as a kind of a Jay Bouwmeester facsimile. And we know what Jay Bouwmeester and Colton Parayko did together back in 2019. So we see Leddy, he's had his struggles, as you mentioned, and every kind of mistake that you see ends up in the back of his net. You look at last night with the turnover to Kaprizov for the Rossi goal on the PK. He doesn't see Hartman coming behind him. Hartman gets behind the defense and scores in San Jose. There was that play where Celebrini had the pass go underneath Letty's stick and to fold in the side of the net. The backdoor play on the penalty kill where Zetterlin beat him to the back post. And even the play in Vegas where he tried to clear the puck from his own zone and it ended up on Shea Theodore's stick for a goal. So there's been a lot that hasn't gone well for Nick Leddy. 8 goals against while he's on the ice, and that's out of the 14 goals that the Blues have allowed. And, not all of them are his fault, obviously. I mean, there's nothing he can do about that empty netter last night, the goalie goal that he was on the ice for. And the other thing is, the goaltending, I think at all strengths when Leddy's on the ice, it's delivered about a 804 save percentage, 805 save percentage, if I remember correctly. So, the mistakes he's making are loud. He hasn't been bailed out by the goaltending. These other underlying metrics are kind of hit and miss. So, in the past, we've always seen that Leddy and Parayko are okay at what they do. They're not really meant for a top pair role. Leddy throughout his career has not been designated as a guy who takes on top matchups. He's been more of a power play guy. Until the last few years, he didn't really spend that much time on the penalty kill. And suddenly he's the first pair over the ice or over the boards with Colton Parayko on the PK as well. So not a role that Letty's played a ton of, not a role that really fits all that well, but it's one that they've been tasked with because there hasn't really been other guys that the Blues have that can fill it.
As they were on the ice working on things earlier today, again, the lineups were shifted a little bit. We've seen that, when Brandon Saad came back, obviously that was going to shift things. But even beyond that, the lines have not yet really remained consistent. We saw Robert Thomas and Kyrou on the top line along with Brandon Saad. That means Jake Neighbors went down to that second line. It seems like they want Thomas and Kyrou together at times. There was some talk in Drew Bannister's conversation about how often he can get Thomas, Kyrou, and Buchnevich on the ice at the same time. They want more from Thomas. They want more from Kyrou. They want more from Neighbors. And it just seems like there's a lot going on at any given moment right now and a number of players that they're trying to push forward offensively.
Yeah, it's been a different lineup every single game so far, and that's counting preemptively tomorrow night's game against the Islanders. And part of that is due to injury with, Texier, and then you have Saad's paternity situation. So some of it's to be expected, but other parts of it where you move Braden Schenn up to the top line for a game in Vegas and then moving Neighbors down and Kyrou up, there's been a lot of shifts going on. And as you mentioned, Drew Bannister has put together Buchnevich, Thomas, and Kyrou at certain points throughout the game. Obviously, we know they're going to be on the top power play together. They're going to be in extra attacker situations at the end of games. And we've seen them on offensive zone draws after an icing, after a goalie stoppage, after a penalty kill. Those three will come out together and try to take advantage of whatever matchup they have. And, I thought it's worth trying out on a full-time basis because, the Blues this summer, their big thing was adding more depth, right? Mm-hmm. And if you truly think that you added more depth and that they can carry some scoring load, why don't you just test it out, see what you got, and load up the top line, let them carry things, and let's see if the depth follows behind that. Instead, they've kind of chosen to split them up, deepen their lineup that way, and maybe get Buchnevich some second-line matchups instead of getting those top tough matchups that he would have gotten alongside Robert Thomas. And so they've chosen to go that way and keep Buchnevich at center. And, we'll see. The points, the production has been there for the most part in, the first week. Kyrie's got 6 points. Thomas is up to 4. Buchnevich has 3 goals. So, the road trip was fruitful from that perspective. And it's just a matter of kind of finding where these guys all slot together. And I don't think the Blues have quite figured that out yet.
We're talking with Matthew DeFranks from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. A lot was made of the performance of the fourth line during that road trip. They already had a nickname. That nickname doesn't work, at least for the time being, because Walker was off the ice today. And Kasperi Kapanen, who was the guy who lost his position when Brandon Saad came back, Kapanen was on that fourth line instead. What does it say to you that not only is there some lineup shuffling going on, but we're also seeing some players coming in and out? And that fourth line group that was so good for the first 3 games today, Drew Bannister said that he felt like that line took a step back yesterday.
Yeah, it's funny. When I worked in Dallas, there was a guy named Sean Shapiro who worked for The Athletic covering the Stars down there, and he had an adage that he treated lines like dogs, right? You don't name them unless you're going to keep them. And so, when you have the WTF line, as they were dubbed, last weekend or last week, they stayed together for, I guess it was four games until they were split up today. So, I find it a little funny. Obviously the line name's catchy and it's funny, and it kind of describes what their play is sometimes, when they're just in there banging around on the boards. But, they were critical in the 2 wins. I think partially you haven't heard them that much in the last 2 games because they haven't impacted the game that much in the previous 2 games. A little bit in Vegas, they had a shift where they were forechecking and kind of turned the possession in St. Louis's direction. And then, 2 shifts later, Pavel Buchnevich scores to start the game. So they did have a good shift that game. Last game against Minnesota, I think they allowed 4 or 5 shots on goal in the same shift by the end of the second period. First 35 minutes or so were pretty much all Blues from a possession standpoint. I think Minnesota only had 3 even strength shots on goal in 35 minutes. And then, fourth line has a shift where they get hemmed in, allow 4 or 5 shots on goal. And, from there, it's not like that was the turning point. I think we can look at the Rossi goal in the third period as kind of the sealer. But after that shift by the fourth line in the second period, the Blues never really got back to their game. And that's not to blame it on them, but that's something that Drew Bannister pointed out today when he was asked about why Walker appears to be coming out of the lineup. He said, well, they just haven't been good. They had that shift where they allowed a bunch, and we have players who are capable that want to be in the lineup. And for right now, that means it's just very happening. And who knows what happens when Tetsier is eventually healthy and when Sundqvist returns from
his knee surgery last year.
Matthew Franks does a fantastic job covering the Blues for the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. You follow him on Twitter at MDeFranks. Appreciate you taking some time, especially on a Blues off night, and hopefully we can catch up with you again down the line.
Absolutely, Matt.
Awesome. Very good. That's Matthew DeFranks joining us here on a Graybar Sports Open Line. Some of those comments that we alluded to from Drew Bannister, we're going to play those for you in about 40 minutes or so. 7:35-ish is when we'll hear from Drew Bannister and some of the topics of conversation he got into today that we're going to play back his comments. The update on Nick Leddy, what they want to do from a defensive pairing standpoint, offensively, how they're trying to get Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou going, and even Jake Neighbors as well. And also what his thought process as the coach was before giving up that goalie goal, pulling the goalie in a two-goal deficit, how he was feeling in that moment. So we'll hear all of that from Drew Bannister. Again, that's going to be coming up at about 7:35. Still on the way, we'll talk some City SC. We'll talk some more baseball as well. Don't go anywhere. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line, and we're back with more in just a moment here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap up hour number one of the program, Kyle Sixta and I are sitting here in the studio, and we're watching up on the monitor. They're doing the introductions on the field in New York, as tonight it is game three between the Mets and the Dodgers. So this is the first game being played in New York of the NLCS. And Kyle, we were just talking a moment ago, like, playoff baseball is special no matter what round it is, but when you get into the NLCS and then the World Series, like, I'm watching the introductions, and I'm just like coveting. I am jealous of the people who are in that ballpark in New York, just experiencing that moment.
It's so much fun. Like, just thinking back to when, you know, those playoff games were happening in St. Louis. They're the best. The teams are getting introduced, just like you said. The Mets are in their black jerseys, which are awesome. I could picture the Cardinals, you know, and their baby blues or their cream alternates. And it's just like, you know, you want that to be us so bad.
Are you like, get goosebumps during introductions of games?
For sure.
Yeah, I love big introductions.
Mm-hmm.
I love it's one of my favorite parts. Like, when I was broadcasting Air Force basketball, we played obviously in the Mountain West, and one of my favorite trips was to go to UNLV, not just because it's Las Vegas and everything, but because, man, they put on a show. And the introduction, I hate saying the words that are about to come out of my mouth, but if you are ever at Allen Fieldhouse for a KU basketball game, the show that they put on the introductions, it is so good. So there was the controversy a few years ago where Drew took his Baylor team off the court because he didn't want them to like see the video and the bigness of what was going on before a KU basketball game. There's nothing better than a really good player introduction.
Right, and it's good home field advantage as well. Yeah. When you go all out like that, and I mean, you could see the Mets fans going crazy, like, that's a huge advantage for your team.
You know, there's been a lot of talk recently. We don't have time to get into it right now, but I think the Cardinals are working on kind of changing the game day presentation, and there's always going to be people out there say, you know, that put a negative spin on it. Well, just win more games. That's all that matters. Like, yes, winning games is the most important thing. But it's okay. Yeah, I was in Toronto. I got to go on that Toronto trip. Toronto had a worse record than the Cardinals. And I can tell you that the presentation that they put on, the show that they put on, the fan interaction, them being engaged in the game in the moment, like, it adds to everything that's going on. So when you hear about the Cardinals, you know, looking at how they do their game day production for every single game, this is not them trying to cover up the fact that they're not winning enough games. This is just the business of professional sports. You put on a show. You put on the best possible show. You make people love every moment of being there. Win or lose, enjoy it, because it's a show and it's professional sports and it's supposed to be fun. And I miss being somewhere where there's a big playoff introduction like we just saw on TV. Back with more in a moment on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
We are back at it as we continue to take you through a Wednesday evening. Again, tomorrow is going to be just a half-hour show. We've got Thursday night football. Joe Potts going to be in coming up tomorrow night. I'll be back with you coming up on Friday. My wife and I have parent-teacher conferences to go to tomorrow, which is a first for us with a kindergartner, so we'll see how that goes. So that's what I will be doing as opposed to hosting this show coming up tomorrow. In a few moments, we'll talk City SC Soccer in our next segment, as we are going to be joined coming up in just a little while by Chris Whittingham. He's going to be on the broadcast coming up this weekend for Apple TV. Want to mention this real quickly. The Chicago White Sox might be getting sold. Jerry Reinsdorf reportedly is in what is being referred to as, quote, active discussions about selling the team. And that's coming off a year where the team went 41-121. 41-121. It is hard to have that kind of record. And according to The Athletic, Reinsdorf is open to selling the team. Reportedly, he is already in active discussions with a group of prospective buyers led by Dave Stewart, a former Major League Baseball All-Star who has had various roles in baseball for a while. I've got a few thoughts on this. First off, congratulations to Chris Ranji, who will probably be the happiest person in the world if this ends up being happening. But in some ways, pumping the brakes might be worth doing. I don't think the White Sox are going to leave Chicago. I don't. I think that's an organization, a team that stays there. That's a huge market. That's a good group of fans. Like they had a terrible product. I'm not trying to like take this opportunity to just like rat on Cubs fans. I'm really not. But having lived geographically fairly close to Chicago for a good number of years, and having a lot of friends who grew up in Chicago, so very small sample size just in terms of the people who have come into my life, I can tell you the people from Chicago who are true baseball fans are White Sox fans, and the people from Chicago who are just kind of like trendy baseball fans are Cubs fans. Kyle Sixt is here. Kyle, you're originally from that area. Do you agree with my assessment on the baseball fandom in Chicago?
I do. Okay. They are good fans. I'll give them that.
Yeah, they've been through a lot. They have been through a lot. And it's look, you sitting through a 41-win season is really, really tough. Here's where I'll be curious to see where this goes, because there was a report not that long ago that the White Sox were eyeing Nashville as a potential place to move to if they don't get a new ballpark in Chicago. And of all the states, if I was a professional sports owner and I wanted to build a new venue, I wouldn't want to be in Illinois. I wouldn't want to be in Illinois. I probably wouldn't want to be in California. Like, there's a handful of states out there where if you're looking to get public money, it's going to be more challenging. And whether you like it or not, let's be honest, ballparks and sports venues are largely being built with public money. That's just the world that we live in. The optics of it is always not great, because you got billionaires putting their hands out and asking taxpayers to flip the bill. I get that, but that's where we're at in this world currently of when you want a new stadium built. And the White Sox want a new stadium, so they're going to have some work in front of them to get that in Chicago. The other thing on this, specifically when it comes to Dave Stewart, if I remember this correctly, he wanted to get a baseball expansion team in Nashville. So now you have Jerry Reinsdorf, who's already floated out the idea of the White Sox moving to Nashville, having discussions with Dave Stewart, who has also previously spoken about trying to get an expansion franchise in Nashville, those two forces coming together. Now, again, I don't think the White Sox are leaving Chicago. When you are a sports owner, you look at the ability to drive revenue, And I think being in Chicago gives you a better opportunity to drive revenue than being in Nashville. Although, well, Nashville is much like, Nashville is a growing city. It's a very forward-thinking city. There's stuff going up all the time. Maybe I've got that one wrong. Maybe there is more of an opportunity. But I just think from a market size standpoint, from the ability to do local TV and get the ratings and everything that goes along with that, it even being the second team in Chicago, it feels like there's more of an opportunity to create revenue there than there would be in Nashville. But maybe I'm wrong with that. And if Nashville wants to build the White Sox a brand new ballpark and they can't get a deal done in Chicago, well, then they might go ahead and pick everything up and head to Nashville. Eventually, baseball is going to expand. Eventually, there's going to be two expansion franchises, and there are a handful of cities that would do a great job covering being able to host Major League Baseball. In addition to Nashville, San Antonio would probably be good. Portland would be good. Montreal would be good. There's others. There are a bunch of cities that could definitely handle supporting a Major League Baseball team. And that's why Major League Baseball is, at some point in time, going to expand by two franchises. However, the word has always been that baseball is not going to go into expansion mode until they got the Tampa situation covered and the Oakland situation covered. Well, the Tampa situation's good. They have all the funding. They've got everything in place. They're going to build a new ballpark. I think it's going to open up in 2028. So they're good in Tampa. Long-term future of the Tampa Bay Rays has been secured inside of that market. We can talk all we want about the A's eventually getting to Las Vegas. There is no guarantee of that happening. There are still a number of things in Las Vegas that are being held up from a legal standpoint. There continues to be challenges inside the city of Las Vegas and inside the state of Nevada to the A's coming there. It feels like a lot of people there just don't want them. It's very weird because they wanted the Raiders. They wanted the Golden Knights. They don't want the A's. I don't think they really have an appetite for Major League Baseball in Las Vegas. So the A's are going to play in a AAA ballpark for the next 2 to 3 years in Sacramento, and we'll see what happens from there. If you were to ask me right now, future of the A's, Las Vegas, a new Major League ballpark in Sacramento, or another city, I think I'd go almost like a 33% chance on any of those things. I think there is just as good of a chance that they stay long-term in Sacramento as they do end up getting to Las Vegas as another city emerges as the city that's going to bring them in. I mean, that is just a disastrous situation right now where they don't have a home. We have two Major League Baseball teams right now that really don't have Major League homes for next year because the A's are going to play in a AAA ballpark. They're going to share it with the Sacramento Rivercats. It's a nice AAA ballpark, but it is a AAA ballpark, and that is going to be a challenge. There's already been talk about if they were to be a playoff team next year, they may play those playoff games somewhere else because players make their money in the playoffs based the revenue that's connected to attendance. And if you've got 10,000 people or however many that ballpark holds, I think it's Raley Field, if I remember that correctly, in Sacramento, however many people that place holds, you want more than that to make your money. And then we talked about this yesterday. It's not clear where the Tampa Bay Rays are going to play next year, but it's looking very likely that it's not going to be at Tropicana Field because of the damage that stadium took in. So, man, there's a lot of unrest right now in kind of the business of professional baseball and Major League Baseball. We don't know who's going to own the White Sox. We don't know where they're going to be long term. We don't know where the Rays are going to play. We don't know where the A's are going to play. There's a lot of stuff up in the air here at the moment. What we do know is coming up in just a moment, Chris Whittingham is going to join us. He's going to be on the call coming up this weekend as City SC wraps up their season. We'll talk with him in just a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. Unfortunately for City SC and their fans, the season has not gone the way anybody would have liked it to have gone, especially coming off their fantastic first season. But since the transfer window, they have played much better soccer. And after an off weekend this past weekend, they are going to wrap up the season against Minnesota on the road coming up this weekend. Minnesota still has something to play for from a seeding standpoint. They're not quite locked in to where they're going to be for City. It's just about finishing off the season on a high note. We're happy to welcome on to the program the guy who's going to be on the call on Apple TV and MLS Season Pass. He is Chris Whittingham. You follow him on Twitter at Chris, WittyNgham. Chris, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
And thank you for spelling my name. It's very helpful in trying to get people to follow me on social media.
I knew if I said it, there's no way anybody would know how to spell it. So I just went ahead and spelled it myself.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You bet. So for City, you have this weird international break each year in the weekend before the final weekend of the regular season. So for teams that are out of it, they just have to sit there for a week knowing there's still one game left, which is tough. Now they come back. There's not a lot to play for. Minnesota still can kind of shuffle themselves around just a little bit in terms of seeding. How do you assess this game where it feels like the two teams are not evenly yoked going in?
I agree. I think it's a difficult one to assess because Minnesota United, and not just from a seeding standpoint, from going up or down, but really the big thing for them to avoid is the wild card game. There is that 8-9 for each conference, and it's a single elimination, could potentially even be away from home. So for Minnesota, they want to take care of that and get to as high as 5. You probably want to avoid the LA teams in the first round because Galaxy and LAFC both look really good right now. So there definitely is that bit to play for, but to your point, St. Louis doing well out of the summer window and coming into this game in decent form. One away at San Jose, obviously beat the rivals Sporting Kansas City and then beat Houston at home. We're a decent side with a lot to play for. Last time out at home, and for John Hackworth, he's got to continue to prove himself as a potential candidate to be the full-time head coach. So there is kind of the jobs on the line portion of the season for a lot of teams in professional sports, but here in MLS, obviously there's that chance to really solidify an 11, and you wonder where the Sporting staff led by Luis Manantial are going to identify as the places to improve. And it's one more game. It's another bit of data, but it's that opportunity for players to earn their jobs for next season.
I've asked this question to a lot of people, but the thing that I have learned about MLS soccer in the 2 years that have existed is how the seasons are more connected to each other than I think in other sports. Like, you don't really take momentum from the end of one season to the next and in baseball or football or in basketball. But coming out of last season, I just remember Bradley Carnell speaking so much about what they were going to, when he did his end of season press conference, in many ways, it felt like they were going to be playing again next week, even though it was going to be months later. Is there value in what City has done here in the last month and a half, 2 months, that can be something tangible that they can take into next season?
Only if they elect to keep that continuity with John Hackworth in charge and by keeping a lot of the core of players together. I actually do think in this case, certainly from a playing standpoint, the coaching one is going to be fascinating, and I'll be curious if they decided to look elsewhere or maybe even look into a coach with a German background because of how much Lutz Fahnenstiel has kind of leaned into that from a playing standpoint. But I do wonder from a playing standpoint because, and it's such a different philosophy, right? Realistically, for the work that St. Louis want to do, and a lot of clubs in MLS want to do, buying players from abroad, bringing players in from Europe, the best time to do that is in the summer. And so that's why St. Louis did that this summer, and they kind of left themselves hanging for this regular season. I think clearly the plan was we're going to start building for 2025 in 2024. And so I don't think there's going to be a ton of big additions coming at the end of this season because they did that work already. You look at Horn, Hartzell, Toyshirt, even Simon Betcher, who came in after playing from abroad. There are a lot of players that came in the summer window that are now established starters. So I think a lot of that work has been done now. I think the big question will be is do they go for maybe one more big player? I think ultimately the thing that left St. Louis City short this season was one dominant, clear, and obvious goal scorer. Klaus just did not step up to that level. You look at the top goal scorer for St. Louis this season, they are on 5 goals. It's multiple players on 5 goals. Ultimately in this league, and I know that Luis Fahnenstiel came out and said from the beginning, we're going for designated team, not a designated player. But ultimately in this league that has Messi, that has Cucho Hernandez, that has Denny Bouanga, that has Ricky Pooch and Gabriel Peck and all these amazing players that are in the top teams, you have to have one of them. So I wonder if they may be audible on that strategy and go for someone big in the offseason. But I think a lot of the core of the team was built in this summer transfer window.
Do you feel like St. Louis in their short time in MLS has turned into a place that players do want to end up at?
I think within MLS, certainly. I don't really know what the draw for players from abroad is. Yeah. It's just kind of tough to know. I think if ultimately you sell a player on a project and your idea of what a club can be, and you play in front of probably one of the very best atmospheres in Major League Soccer, even when the team is struggling, even when the reserve team is run out, it's remarkable the atmosphere that is built around soccer in the city. And you well know better than I do about the culture of soccer around St. Louis. It's so strong. So I think that sales job has been done well. And I think the question will be, is within MLS, is there that desire to play in this team? And ultimately, what are the kinds of fits that you can have? Because you look at a player like Henry Kessler, for instance, I think that's kind of an interesting test case, because Tim Parker was this incredible source of identity for the team and source of leadership. You let him go, you bring Henry Kessler. And I think in some ways, I was reading about him today, actually, in prepping for the game. And he was like, yeah, it was fascinating that I was walking through the streets and someone recognized me in street clothes. I was walking through the airport and someone said, welcome to the city. And it's kind of fascinating that a player can experience that maybe for the first time. I doubt Henry Kessler was probably getting stopped in Boston when, you know, you have the Celtics and the Patriots and the Red Sox and everyone. So I think that sense of culture might be what's spreading around the league. It will make players want to go there. But it's kind of interesting that ultimately the job on for the club is not even within MLS. It's making that pitch to players from Europe, and that clearly has happened already. So I do think that St. Louis, for what they've done off the field, definitely deserve a lot of credit for making it attractive.
Chris, I want to continue saying the praises of everything you guys are doing at Apple TV and MLS Season Pass. And even though City fans have just one more opportunity to watch their team play this weekend, the MLS playoffs are going to be so exciting again this year. And all that is available for folks to watch on Apple TV if they subscribe to the MLS Season Pass.
Yeah, and there is that deal through the end of the year. I believe it's $9.99 for the sprint through the playoffs, and you get the playoffs as well. I also believe you get the MLS Season Pass games with the subscription to Apple TV Plus for the remainder of the year as well. So, I mean, there's some brilliant shows on there. I'm not just saying that because I'm promoting the product, but I really do genuinely watch a lot of shows on Apple TV Plus. So, yeah, I mean, the race to the playoffs can be fascinating. I'm really interested to see year two of the new playoff format with the three-game series. Unfortunately, St. Louis City were really the only team on the wrong end of the playoff format last year, when Kansas City swept them in two games. But I kind of think that this year we're going to see that added bit of interest in that first round. And I imagine when you look at the top five contenders, they're fairly obvious. It's the two Ohio teams, the two LA teams, and Inter Miami. I wonder if any of those teams are made to sweat in the first round, because it was so obvious throughout most of the year, oh, those are going to be the teams that are competing for the championship. And you just never know in a single elimination or even a best of three playoff format if that is going to change at some point. So, yeah, I think the playoff race through decision day, certainly in the Eastern Conference, where there is still jeopardy about who will make it. But even as the playoffs go on, it's going to be such a fascinating story. And it ultimately revolves around Lionel Messi, who will have up to four home games to win another trophy and win the trophy in his first full season in Major League Soccer. So there's so many storylines that are going into the playoffs.
Well, Chris, we appreciate you taking some time with us. Have a great call this weekend, and I'm sure we will talk again moving forward as City gets into their third season in his existence next year.
Appreciate it. Have a good night, guys.
All right, very good. That's Chris Whittingham joining us. Again, he's going to be on the call on Apple TV and MLS Season Pass. Of course, you can hear the game as well on our sister station, Y98. So we've got you covered when it comes to City SC. No matter where you want to hear it, see it, you've got options for sure. And yeah, if you're a big soccer fan and you haven't subscribed to that, you can watch the MLS playoffs and catch City SC before the season does wrap up. Obviously, disappointing year, but I do think it's clear that they have built something going into next season. All right, we're going to jump back into the Blues coming up in just a moment. Drew Bannister had a lot to say earlier today when it comes to where his team is at coming out of the game last night, which was a disappointing performance for the team. We'll talk about that coming up in just a moment on KMOX. Welcome back in. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. We're getting done here in just a little while, right around 8 o'clock or so. And then this evening from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, it is the St. Louis City Soccer Report, as Nate and Jen will be in with you for those couple hours. So make sure to be tuned in for that as City gets set for their final game of the season this weekend. Also, I'm sure they'll touch on it at some point in time. We learned today that when the U.S. men's national team is playing here in St. Louis in about a month or so, that they're opponent opponent is going to be Jamaica. And the U.S. men's national team has a long, long, long history of playing matchups in St. Louis. Has had a lot of success in St. Louis. And now we are going to see them again. And it's going to be the third time that they have played at City Park. Last night, the Blues lose to Minnesota. It was not a very good effort from the Blues as they end up losing by a 4-1 score. It was 3-1. And there was a goalie goal late, which made it 4-1 with the empty netter. And they are through one game of a four-game homestand, which will include a matchup against the Islanders tomorrow, Carolina on Saturday, and then next Tuesday they are set to take on Winnipeg. We're going to have a little fun with audio. We'll listen in to head coach Drew Bannister. He spoke with the media earlier today after practice and went through a few different things. First off, there's been a lot of criticism of Nick Leddy, and rightfully so. No, he has not played well to start the season. I think the big question right now when it comes to Leddy is how much of this downtick of what we've seen is just who he is now, and how much of this is just, you know what, a bad start to the season. Every player goes through funks, and he happens to be going through a funk here early on. The optics of some of his plays to start the season, bluntly, have been terrible, and he's been on the ice for a lot of goals. He was not on the practice ice earlier today. He's dealing with a bit of a lower body injury, and Bannister gave a full update on Leddy's health.
Yeah, I don't think that block had anything to do with him being off the ice today. It was something that kind of popped up yesterday afternoon and then again this morning, so we kept him off the ice. Lower body, yep.
How much did that impact the way you placed?
I mean, I think it'd probably be a question for the player, but I don't think it impacted it that much. I think he was, you know, focused on and ready to play. And I think if he felt like the injury was going to hold him back or hinder him in any way of being able to play, then he would have taken himself out. But he felt that he could be, you know, a player for us. And he made a mistake. He owned up to it. You know, it's up to us as a team, as a group, to make sure that we have his back and build him up. He's a good player for us. We got to get him playing in the way we know he can play.
Did you look at his availability for tomorrow?
I think right now it's day to day. He could be questionable for tomorrow, but I won't know until tomorrow morning.
If Leddy cannot play tomorrow, the defensive pairings are going to look like this. At least the top defensive pairing will look like this. Ryan Suter is going to move up and be up there along with Colton Parayko. Suter, obviously a veteran who's been on that third defensive pairing here so far during the season. Bannister was asked why the arrangement and why the alignment has Suter going to that top defensive pairing.
I think he's played really well right now. And again, he's a veteran player that's played in those situations before. And I think he deserves the opportunity to go up there and play with Perry if that's, you know, what happens here. If Leddy's not able to go, I think that's a good pairing to have. And again, a veteran player that has played in those situations. So he'll be able to handle it, no question.
Taking a step back and looking at the defenseman more from a big picture standpoint, Bannister said that that group, they need to do a better job of handling the puck.
Yeah, I thought yesterday we struggled our counters, and which was a little bit, obviously it was concerning for us today, and something we worked on quite a bit here today. Something that we didn't see, you know, in the first three games. We thought we counted the puck pretty well. For whatever reason, we got away from what we did well, which led to not being able to get to a forecheck, which led to less time in the offensive zone and getting numbers in on the puck quick. Our support through the neutral zone has to be a lot better. Forwards getting open for D and then D getting up quick to the forwards.
Just one goal being scored last night for the Blues. And there's a number of players who recently have been struggling, players that you want to see playing better. And there's also just the continued figuring out of the lines. And we've seen a lot of line shifting here over the first few games. Some of that had to do with the fact that Brandon Saad was not on that trip to start the year. He was back yesterday. He was on that top line, and Jake Neighbors was on that top line as well. Practice today, Thomas and Kyrou were back on the top line together along with Brandon Saad as Jake Neighbors went to the second line along with Pavel Buchnevich and Zach Bolduc. Let's start by talking about Thomas and Kyrou and Bannister's thoughts on getting those guys on the ice together more often.
I mean, they've had chemistry in the past, and I feel right now like they're two players that we need to get going, and they need to be, you know, top players for us. And I think this is a way to give them an opportunity to kind of get back and get on track and start playing some real good hockey for us, because we need them if we're going to have success.
For Thomas playing in the middle, and we saw last year, I mean, this guy is somebody who can play at an all-star level, and you were certainly hoping that he would take another step forward this year, and he still certainly can. We're four games into the season. Certainly nothing really means anything at this point, but Bannister still said that they are definitely trying to get Thomas going.
Yeah, I think he's still trying to find his game offensively, and, for him, we've tried different combinations, which, you know, probably not easy to as a centerman, that you're, you know, having different wingers every, you know, second, third game, I guess. We stuck with the line pairings for the first three games, made small adjustments, with Saad going on his line in the last game. We put Shen up on the wing, and there seemed to be a little bit of chemistry, but, he's getting opportunities. It doesn't seem to be going in the net for him right now. I don't foresee moving forward that there's going to be an issue. Like, he's going to find his game offensively. And I think, you know, for him, the focus has to be away from the puck, making sure that, you know, his details away from the puck to give him more opportunities offensively. But, you know, both teams make mistakes, and you know, when teams make mistakes, he's able to jump on them, and you don't have to hope offensively and give away your defensive responsibilities to create offense.
Thought this was an interesting question. We've talked about this a fair amount on this show. At times we will see Thomas, Kyrou, and Buchnevich on the ice together. They'll do that in offensive zone faceoffs. They'll do that after PKs, situations like that. But generally speaking, Buchnevich is going to be your second line center, and Thomas is going to be your first line center. So you want those guys in those positions. Bannister was asked whether or not it's tempting to just have Thomas, Kyrou, and Buchnevich on a line together where Buchnevich would no longer be that second line center.
It's tempting in situations, but I know for the team as a whole, it's best to have Bucci in the middle for us to have success long term.
Mentioned Jake Neighbors yesterday. He was on the first line. Tomorrow, expect him to be on that second line, being centered by Buchnevich. Neighbors is still somebody who you feel like he can really take a step forward himself this year. We haven't seen it quite yet from him, and Bannister said that there are absolutely some things that Neighbors could do better.
I think Jakey's been playing well. I think offensively, he hasn't really been able to find the back of the net. But I think even, you know, for Jakey, I think he can be a little bit more direct in the way he plays and be a little bit harder around the net. As a group, I think that's kind of bled into our game where, you know, as a whole, right now we're not around the blue paint enough, and we have to be more direct in getting there quickly.
Kasperi Kapanen did not play yesterday with Brandon Saad coming back. He was the odd man out. In practice today, Kapanen was on the fourth line along with Torpchenko and Faxa. That line, which previously had also included Nathan Walker, and we were calling that the WTF line, which is just a fantastic name for a line, it's now not that. It's the KTF line, I guess we could go with. Walker was the guy who was off the ice, off that line today. So in all likelihood, Kapanen will be on the fourth line and be back in the lineup coming up tomorrow. That line was really good to open up the season. Not so much yesterday, according to Bannister.
I thought that line as a whole has been really good, especially on the road for us. And I thought they took a step back as a group, not just one player. They had the one shift in the second where they got hemmed in when we were you know, we had a lot of ozone time, and you know, for that line, they're at their best when they're able to wear teams down and play in the other team's offensive zone. And I just thought they didn't get to their game as much as, you know, they had in previous games. And you know, when we do that again, we have good players sitting out right now that want to get in the lineup. And you know, if guys aren't playing to what we feel the expectations are as players, and somebody will step in and want to take their job.
Not great when this early on in the season you're already talking about good players sitting and competition for spots and things like that. It's all true, but generally those are the type of narratives that come out when the season gets a little bit deeper. Last thing from Drew Bannister before we move on. He was asked a little bit more about that goalie goal. So it's a 3-1 game, so a 2-goal deficit late, and he makes the decision to pull the goalie. He was asked about the thought process of everything that went on in that moment that eventually did result in the goalie goal from Minnesota.
It's a 3-1 game. You know, I think as a coach, it's my job to give our team every opportunity to tie, win a hockey game, you know, and I'm not just going to concede that, you know. So I felt, you know, whether it was 17, 19 seconds, I've seen weird stuff happen in the game before at all different levels. You know, if we get a quick goal there, you know, if there's 8-10 seconds left, you know, maybe we're able to get one more shot on that. So that's the thought process there.
That is Drew Bannister, the head coach of the St. Louis Blues, speaking earlier today. Again, the Blues get back at tomorrow when they are going to match up against the Islanders. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap things up on this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley, taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. Tomorrow we'll have just a half-hour show as we've got Thursday Night Football coming up tomorrow evening. The Thursday night game tomorrow that you will hear, the Broncos and the Saints. So Sean Payton returning to New Orleans as the head coach of the Broncos, who are one of the bigger surprises, I think, this year in the NFL with their record at 3-3. Not that that's great, but the Broncos were expected to be absolutely terrible. They started 0-2 before winning 3 in a row, and now we'll see what they do against New Orleans coming up tomorrow night. So this is one of those segments where, you know, hopefully my daughter is not listening, because I have a belief that I try to instill in her that you should not lie. That lying is not good. I am a God-fearing individual. We are called to do many things. One of those things is not to lie. I'm going to tell you right now a situation where somebody should have just lied, should have just not told the truth. And look, that it happens in sports. There are clearly times where it happens in sports. How often do we see in baseball, pitcher intentionally hits a hitter, and then what do we hear in the clubhouse after the game? Oh, the ball just slipped out of my hands. Of course you're going to say that. You have to say that. That's part of the what we do in sports. So if you weren't watching college football this past weekend, Oregon and Ohio State were matched up against each other. Oregon ended up winning. And late in the game, Oregon defensively put 12 men on defense. They did that to make sure that Ohio State would not get a big play. They were very willing to take the penalty for too many players on the field, but the clock ticks down during that time. It's not the first time that that's ever happened, but it is the most publicized time that it has ever happened. I was the Dan Patrick Show, nationally syndicated radio show. Oh, geez. I think it was Rick Neuheisel who they had on earlier in the week. I saw a clip of it on social media, and Neuheisel told a story about matching up against a team many years ago who did the exact same thing. So that it's something that's kind of been out there. You don't run into situations very often where you are in a position where that makes sense to do, but when you are, you do it, and it made a lot of sense for Oregon. So Oregon coach Dan Lanning, God love him, he was asked about it, whether or not they did it on purpose, and He admitted to it. He said, yeah, that his quote was, "We spend an inordinate amount of time on situations, and some situations don't come up very often in college football, but this was obviously something we had worked on, and you can see the results." All right. So it's not cheating per se, because again, he got penalized for it, but it kind of goes against the spirit of the game, right? It goes against the spirit of the game. It's like counting cards in Vegas. It's not illegal, but it's frowned upon. And this is one of those things where you got penalized, but the penalty wasn't actually a penalty because you went into it knowing it was a penalty. So the correct thing for Dan Lanning to say on Monday when he was asked about it was, no, just a coincidence that it worked out that way. We wouldn't put 12 men on the field like that. We'll play straight up. We believe in our guys, whatever. Like, do that sort of thing. That is the correct thing to say, and you try to squash it just a little bit. Because what happens today? The NCAA announcing that they have closed the loophole that allowed the time to come off the clock. In a release earlier today, the NCAA issued a new rules interpretation. So it's not a new rule, but they are now going to interpret the rule in a different way. And the penalty for 12 players on the field in the final 2 minutes of either half, if the defensive has 12 players actively participating in the down, the offense can choose, along with the 5-yard penalty, to have the game clock reset to the time that had been displayed at the snap. So that happening this past weekend, it is something that has happened in college football every once in a while over the years. Defensive coordinators have been ready for it. Head coaches have been ready for it. Not going to happen anymore. Now you are going to be, and the offense will be allowed to have the game clock reset on that type of play. So Dan Lanning, look, there was a lot made of this, even if Lanning would not have said that they did it on purpose. So maybe this was coming down the pike no matter what, because it was being talked about it. But this is one of those situations where Dan Lanning, little fib, little white lie, might have done you a little good in terms of trying to keep this loophole, as the NCAA would like to call it, a loophole in place. All right, that is it for the program today. Again, half-hour show tomorrow. I won't be here. Joe Pott will be in tomorrow. Parent-teacher conferences from the Pauley household tomorrow for our kindergartner. That's a first for us. And that's what I'll be doing tomorrow night. But I'll talk to you on Friday. Joe Pott's got you tomorrow. This has been a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.